God, I love that. I love the intro music. I love that. It's like, it's so cyberpunky. So, Nine Inch Nails back in the day. It's very much, I've got a punch deck. You know, I've got to jack into the grid. Then, like, just, you know, some eyeglass wearing guy just tapping away at a keyboard with a power glove on her, something like that. Anyway, hey, how is it going? Why'd I start like that? I don't know. But yeah, this is Maniacal Books weekly podcast. I am the guys in charge of this dumpster fire. My name is Alex Mack. And if you're listening, thank you for clicking on me, checking me out. What is Maniacal Books? Who are you? Why should I care? Who are you, right? So, all right, fair enough. I'll tell you who. Maniacal Books is a indie publisher that publishes horror and sci-fi and like fantasy. That's a pretty grotesque, it's a hard R. You could say it's stories that have a hard R to them. And I guess the hook for this one is a lot of the stories will have kind of like predominantly black cast or, you know, people of color cast, because they are written by a person of color. That person would be me. Hi, I'm Alex Mack. I just started this and I wrote my first book. This has already been published. It is actually I have it right here. It's a horror title called Mulch, and it's gonna be obscured by the camera. And just off the back, yeah, I need like a green screen because I'm getting the trash in the back. Yeah, I need a green screen because that's just terrible. That's horrible. And I need a mic. I found out I need a mic because I like this one's okay. It's pretty good, but I mean, it sounds very airy. I'm not that I don't sound that full, and it's not picking me up the way I want. As you can see, this is small time indie struggle time right here. So yeah, it's been I'm not gonna go into the whole thing, but it's been decades in the making, I can honestly say. I really, really honestly started just writing weird stuff, crazy stuff. Like, man, I probably want to say 12, 13 years old. I'm just writing like fan fiction. And for me, it was I fell into comic books really heavy. It was like X-Men. I read a ton of X-Men. It was like the first comic book I actually got into, and I started reading, and I just like was obsessed with it. And I finally just started writing up kind of like stories and stuff on my own. So that's when I first started just kind of writing, and that's been a while ago. What did I say, 12, 13? Yeah, it's been a minute. So I was like writing constantly, and so I finally, in the pandemic, like when everybody, I feel like God made everybody just go to their own corners for a minute, because, you know, we're just off the hook as a species right now. And so while I was just sitting there, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to try to, why not just write something and just publish it, you know, just to do it. Kind of, I mean, what the hell else? What the hell else was I doing? Because I had gotten, my contract ran out, I got laid off, and I was just sitting at home, and I was just like, you know, I'll just, in the meantime, I'll, you know, look for jobs. I ended up just going to the post office for a minute. I worked there for like two weeks, 3 weeks. And I was like, all right, yeah, that's enough. I'm out. I got a couple of checks, so I'm good. And I just like, from then, I was just kind of like, all right, let me just get this going. And the damn thing, see, this is, oh my God, this is just straight struggle time right now. all this stuff. This never happened on the other podcast. Anyway, so yeah, and I ended up publishing this baby right here, called Mulch. I was gonna bring this in, but I lost my page. But I have a graphic. I'll put the graphic up there. For anybody that's listening, it's the official title is called Mulch, the first thrilling novella from Maniacal Books. It was published in 2021. Was it February? Like February 2021. And, to my surprise, actually, it kind of debuted at number one on the African American fiction category, I think. I have to look at that and make sure. I took a screen grab of it because I'm like, nobody's gonna believe me. I barely believe it. Like, but yeah, it actually debuted at number one and it stayed there for like a whole day. Like my book, my little book was number one on a African American fiction thing, and yeah, that was cool. That was thrilling. I made sure to way more deal of effort into it than I usually do anything else, just for because I want to do this and I want to do it good. I guess that goes without saying, but I wanted to kind of like make it a thing, because if I make it a thing and make it a whole thing, then like it's hopefully it translates out to anybody else that, you know, sees that it's been kind of has like a lot of effort. It wasn't just thrown out there, you know. And so I got a really good editor. I hired like a professional, like a truly professional editor to like go through the books. I didn't have like, I don't know, somebody's my boy's friend's cousin's mama, he like to go to like edit the thing or whatever. Nothing crazy like that. Yeah, I know a girl that like reads a lot. So yeah, she just read it and said, you know, just so I said, yeah, all right, it's all right. Yeah, it's good. There you go. Yeah, where's my $50 or whatever? But it's been pretty good. Now again, indie publisher. I have no money. I don't have a budget. I don't have a scope. I don't have any connects or anything like that. The response, the thing is, nobody read it. Basically, the main point is nobody read it. But the people who did end up picking it up and reading it, that I've heard like a bunch of like positive stuff about it. Like people who actually have like picked it up. Even the reviews on it I haven't gotten completely slammed yet. But the few that I have been all right, they've been okay. They've been pretty positive to okay. Okay to positive, I guess you could say. I got a bunch of 3 stars. Actually, you know, why am I talking about it? Just pull the damn thing up already. This is the Amazon page. My voice cracked. My Amazon page. It's only got, again, not nobody read it. Not a lot of people read it, but the reviews that it has gotten, and also just kind of word of mouth too. People who just kept like the paperback and just didn't get the ebook or anything like that. Like when they sit down to kind of read it, I guess you know, it's not terrible. You know, it's not the worst garbage they ever read. But I got the lowest is probably like 3 stars, and it's just a weird one. I didn't understand. Yeah, a decent book, quick read with a little more polish, editing, crafting. Yeah, and so that's the other thing. So yeah, this is like February 2021. This was before. So I put it out way early last year, and I was seeing this, and I think another one that said, oh, yeah, see, good story, but needs polish. So I was like, okay, fair enough. And that's when I kind of went back to the drawing board a bit. And I remember it was like 1 a.m. or something like that. And I was just, it was just in my bed. Like, okay, how do I don't know anybody. I don't like, you know, I don't who, how do I get like a good editor or whatever to look through this? And I just 1 a.m. it just kind of like hit me. Just like, just okay, go to LinkedIn. And you know, I have my company, like registered company, you know, Monaco Books. So it's just like, you know, I just go to LinkedIn, create a profile, and start looking for people. And so I did that, and I got in touch with I put in the application, not thinking anything of it, right? Just thinking like, okay, it's a thing. Maybe I'll get like 5 or something, and maybe there'll be like actual editors or whatever. But bro, I got about like over 100, I think like 120 applications, like in the next day. I had to cut it off. Like I had to like cut it off at like, cause when I woke up and I got to work the next day, I would look at it and it was like, yo, nah. Okay. Wait, hold up. What did I just do? What I done? Oh God, what I done? And so, yeah. And I ended up getting, a lot of like really, really good, highly qualified editors and stuff. And I also got like somebody who was supposed to help with graphic design, but they ghosted me. So I mean, whatever. But no, the thing is, I found a really, really good editor who is, you know what, I'm gonna pull her up here. I'm gonna shout her out right now, because I'm gonna go to my website. And also, so Monaco Books is the imprint of my main company, Max Books Publishing. You know, you see my thing right here. But I'm gonna go to staff. Please don't look at that. Don't. God, I hate that picture. I gotta replace that. But Kate Schaefer, who's the one I found on LinkedIn, and is like she is very easy to work with. She kind of understood what I was getting at. And you know, I think I sent her a link to like a book or whatever, and she checked it out and said, you know, it's pretty good. Like, it needs some work, like everybody else was saying, but it's pretty good. And yeah, man, I hit it off right there. And she is, and like we work well, so good that I was like, you know what, you gonna be my editor in chief? Like, dude, are you okay with being my editor in chief? You know, because you don't really want to work with anybody else. So yeah, you're pretty good here. And so, yeah. And man, she really helped me understand like the worth of like a really good editor. Cause like it's your words you're writing, but she can craft it and turn it and tone it in the way that it makes, it hits harder. It's more relevant, and it just makes it better. I don't know if I can put it in the words like that. But yeah, she is good. And check out maxbooks.com. That's mcsbooks.com for like more stuff on that, because the plan is to do some more videos and stuff like that on that end. But okay, all right, anyway, where am I? Let me just read a quick little excerpt from here, you know, just to see what I'm working with, and you know what's happening over here. So as you know, if you're watching this, hopefully you'll check it out, and you know, pick up the book, you know, become a supporter. That'd be rad. But all right, let's see. now I gotta enunciate. Tip of the tongue, top of the T. All right, I'm done. Right. Okay. The silent darkness of the sweeping plains hang about Deputy Arakpo like a death shroud. Each crunch of earth beneath her boot seems to echo out to the vast blackness of the wide open night. To her, the sound rings like dinner bells for the creatures that threaten this ground. Dread bubbles up from the pit of her gut with each step. Trekking alone in the dark, she has one thought that keeps settling at the forefront of her mind, like a simmering ember of a fire that refuses to smolder and die. At night, a quiet force is a dangerous force. because all the small forest critters know to stay quiet when a predator is near. But she dares not let that slow her momentum. Egged on by her sense of duty and her promise to the kids and Mrs. McClendon, she opts to not turn on a flashlight while she exposes in the endless flat darkness as she wishes not to make herself an easy target for whatever horrors lie waiting behind the distant trees. Drawing on her years of experience working the graveyard shift in Baltimore's Harlem Park neighborhoods, she pushes past the fear and focuses on the situation. Retreading the path she walked just hours ago with the family, she notices the ugly plants are mostly gone. Only a low droning of insects hover gently over the jagged stumps protruding out of the ground. Curiosity wins over her fear as she finally pulls out her flashlight. She clicks the gadget to life and sweeps a beam of light over the tobacco field. She jumps backwards in fright and almost loses grip on the flashlight. The entire field is now covered in an ocean of writhing insects. Wave after wave of flies, spiders, moths, and locusts furiously scamper and prod over the crop field. Leaning in to get a better look at what entranced the bugs, she notices the tobacco plants are being stripped of the covering of goo. The bugs are devouring the alien substance with ferocity, intensity, wiping whole leaves clean in a matter of seconds. The monstrous plants are being inhaled by the swarm. Whole leaves and stems disappear at a moment's time. Okay, that's enough. All right, I'm good. So yeah, that is pretty deep in the story. Actually, it's kind of towards the end of it. I like to describe it as just kind of like a B horror movie from the 80s. It's very kind of straightforward. It's a very kind of dark, very like menacing, very somber kind of story. A lot of it takes place at night. And it's very kind of like isolated rural horror. And I don't know. Hopefully that piqued the interest. And I don't know. Hopefully I read good. I don't read so good no more. All right. All right. Here we go. So enough of that. All right.
Travel with me to a dark and isolated farm located deep in the heart of St. Mary's County, Maryland, where the only African-American farmer and his family are being tormented by some thing stalking around their property. Can they survive? Can they protect the farm that is their very livelihood? And can they do it with their sanity intact? Are you in the mood for dark, isolated rural horror? Are books full of ghastly green goo and reanimated corpses your jam? Then check out Mulch, the eerie inaugural novella from Maniacal Books, available today on Amazon Kindle and mcsbooks.com.
Now, what this podcast is actually going to be about, so it's going to be a little bit of that, a little bit of publishing, a little bit of writing, a little bit of novelization and stuff like that, but I am also wanted to use this to be like a show that kind of showcases horror in pretty much every medium. And so I have a lot of shows and movies and stuff that I watch, and a lot of internet things as well. I want to do some reviews of some TV shows, some movies. Do a little reacting, just have some fun with it, and hopefully bring some eyes over to my books, to my channel, and try to like cross pollinate, right? You gotta coordinate. Rest in peace, Spoon. But so this This week, I am going to be talking about evil and, was it Prey? Both from Paramount Plus and Hulu, respectively. And also, but first I'm going to do a quick reaction here for a little thing on YouTube I just saw a couple days ago, actually, called Backrooms. This is very fascinating. I think it's a creepypasta. Is creepypasta still a thing? Is that still a thing? I honestly don't know. I haven't heard that for a while. But there's nothing. The one thing I really love about Backrooms is there's no other way to really explain that. Like, it's very much a creepypasta, but it's its own kind of thing, its own entity, its own kind of branching narrative that's just ongoing. And this is something that's going to put a lot of people to shame. It's completely brilliant. It's very much like an indie, low budget thing, you know, which, hey, respect, props to, you know, I'm in the mud right with you. You know what I'm saying? But this thing is done by a 17-year-old kid. A 17-year-old kid. You believe? Like, it's so well done. It's so well done. It's hard to believe, like, a 17-year-old kid is doing this. Like, there's no way. But, yeah, so, all right, what is Backrooms? Backrooms, so, apparently, you can no-clip out of reality. And no-clip is an old video game term. I remember that back in the 90s when I was playing my computer games and stuff like that. So it's basically like it's a cheat code you put in the game, and it lets you just fly around the map, and you can go through walls, you can go through floors and ceilings, so you can like and just like float above the map, so you can like see, like get a good like view of the maps. And it was always in a few games, it was actually pretty cool to do that, because you can see like the game layout, and you can see where the enemies are or what the enemies are doing, like two levels below you or something like that, which is really cool. But so in this is like in reality, you no clip from like from the world, from like where we are. And like, so I kind of like my chair is no clipping into. I need a green screen. I'm broke. But yeah, so it's this thing is, you know, you clip out of reality, and so you go into these back rooms, which is like the staging area that's like for our realm, basically. You disappear from our reality and you go into like the back rooms, like the unexplored or the what's supposed to be the non-existent territory, right? And so and it's full of like just yellow rooms and yellow walls and things like that. And it's very much like isolated horror, and they have like the found footage aspect to it too. And it's so well done, and it is pretty damn genius, honestly. It's hard to believe that just one 17-year-old kid is like doing all this, you know, because it's so well kind of thought out. And he has like a branching narrative too, so like things that happen in one video, and it'll take you like three or four videos to find out, oh, okay, so that's what that was supposed to be or whatever, you know. And it's just, and it is something to think about, like that would be completely horrifying, like you just phase into this other place and it's just like a maze of just yellow walls and stuff like that, you know. And yeah, like right there they got people like disappearing, like think people disappearing, and like this another otherworldly creature or something that's lurking this as well. It's one of the best horror things I've seen in a long time, actually. And I think this is kind of a gem, because it's very much an independent thing. It's not a Hollywood thing, and it's not even like, I don't even know if this would translate into like a typical like horror medium, kind of like that's just one of the things that's like really great about YouTube and what creators are doing on YouTube. You know, it kind of subverts regular media, you know, into, and it's this whole new thing, like, because you can't consume this in a regular way, like a bunch of people go to a movie theater and you just like stare at the screen, you know, to watch it. But because the way you watch this is the most effective way is just like, I think how most people like first come in contact with this, you just watching YouTube at like 1 a.m, you know, and like in a, you're just in a dark room, you're in your bedroom, like on your phone or on your tablet, and you're just watching this, and it's, and like you're already like in this very kind of isolated zone, this isolated kind of mood, and you're in the dark, and then like again you're just going through these back rooms, these back alleys, and it's yeah, it's that's what it's kind of like is most effective, you know. So yeah, again, 17 years old, I can't believe it. There's about 12 of these videos, I believe. I haven't seen all of them, but I've seen, I think probably about half so far. And he's still working on these, like as we speak, honestly. I think the last one came out like 2 weeks ago or so. And so, yeah, I kind of want to, you know, watch this, do a reaction to this. This fits the maniacal book's motif kind of to a T. Yeah, this might be the best thing on YouTube. This might be the best thing horror related on YouTube. It might just be. That's crazy. That's incredible. Yeah, so there, again, that's the latest one they reviewed, but there's like 12 other ones. And they had the car in there, which there's a bunch of videos they put out there that's like really short clips. And they had one of them that like there was this car just driving like a highway and it just kind of clipped out of existence and just kind of sitting there like, okay, what the hell is that? You know, but so that monster in there, they actually like show that in the very first one. Yeah, God, I hate the sound. I mean, I hate, but I love it. But man, the way the sound design on that monster is just, is the most, God, imagine something sounding like that and you hear his footsteps frantically, like, racing towards you. God, yeah. So, again, Kane Pixels is the guy who makes this. 17 years old. Like, unbelievable. Man, if I'm gonna give a review from 1 to 5, for Backrooms as a series at this point, because this is ongoing still, but as in this point in September 2022, I would give this a 5 out of 5. Like, yeah, it's not done yet, but and it got me. I never fall for jump scares. Fall for jump scares, but it got me. I wasn't expecting that. But yeah, Backrooms, Kane Pixels, 17 years. I keep saying it, I know, but come on, man. Jeez, but yeah, I love it. All right. Segment of the pod, I have 2 reviews to knock out for everybody here. I have my thing in upside down, that's why I was uncomfortable. So yeah, I have 2 of them here. So I have Prey, which I'll get to first, and then I have Evil, this TV show on CBS. So Prey, directed by Dan Trachtenberg, starring Amber Midthunder as Naru and Dakota Beavers as Tabe. I think that's how you say that, Tabe or Taabe. It's a rated R and it's available on Hulu. And this is sort of right off the bat. It's a genius concept, actually. It's I honestly never thought I needed this. It's one of the things you didn't know you needed it until it was presented to you. The Predator. In the 1700s, and going against Native Americans. Okay, yeah, I didn't know I wanted anything like that, but okay, yeah, let's go, let's do it. yeah, it's a really solid film. I'm a fan of the Predator franchise. The first one with Arnold Schwarzenegger, the best. Like, it's hands down the best one. But the second one with Danny Glover, very underrated. Nobody talks about that, and it's like Danny Glover in a Predator movie. What? But he's like this cop in L.A. It takes place in L.A. this time, and I imagine one of the taglines for that was it went from the jungle to the concrete jungle, or something stupid like that. Some like a bad 90s action movie tagline would have. It's really underrated though. Like I remember seeing that as a kid, and I was like, that's even as a kid, I'm like, that's different. You know, that's new. And there's been a couple of them. You know, they had the AVP, Aliens vs. Predators, which is okay. I really don't remember anything about that, except Sanaa Lathan is in it. That's all I really remember about that. I can't remember who won, if the Xenomorphs or the Predators won, but I don't know. It was an all right movie. And then there was one with Adrian Brody. I still haven't caught that one yet. From what I've heard, it's on a scale of 1 to 5, it's aight. You know, this one though, this is a very solid movie. I really like, you know, going, I don't think we've had, a fully Native American cast in a movie quite like this, which you gotta respect that. You gotta commend that. It's really well thought out, really well done. I really love the characters in this too. The main lady in here, Amber Midthunder. Yeah, I really liked her in this. She really kind of held her own. Plot is she is looking to become like a hunter, or like a warrior, just like her brothers, or like all the other kind of male kids in there. And you know, they give her a bunch of grief and stuff like that, because you know, it's like you're a girl, you can't hunt with the rest of us. You know, she end up like trying to like prove that she can hold her own, and they go on these like hunts and things like that, to track it to a coyote or a mountain lion, I think, or something like that. Like they're going after a mountain lion or something, and you know, I think she ends up getting injured in the hunt, and so she goes back. But the whole time she's saying, like, I think she saw the ship, but she was just thinking it was like a star, like a fallen star or meteor or something like that. But she kept, the whole time she's saying, like, she found like these other kills and stuff, and she's like, look, there's something else out there. You know what I mean? But you know, the boys are like, yeah, all right, whatever, man. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. And her brother, what did I say his name was again? He was really, I really liked him in this too. Like, he was really good. Is it Dakota Beavers? Yeah, Dakota Beavers played Ta'abi, I think is how you say his name. He was really good in this too. Like, he really held his own. And he didn't play it as the, like a lot of other movies, he would have been like the, just the, I don't know, kind of bully, like older brother or whatever, and just kind of like, you know, just, you know, pushed his little sister off just to like, you know, hang with his boys, or like, you know, just to improve his standing with the boys in the pack or whatever. But no, he didn't do that. He actually like really, he was really rooting for his sister, you know, in the long run, you know. But yeah, he's part of the pack, part of the tribe. He's a warrior, you know. He's trying to earn his stripes as well, which they played that to a T. But yeah, they really play well off of each other. Yeah, I believe their relationship in this, it really came off as like a kind of like a believable brother sister thing. And you know, when everything starts happening, you know, the hit the fan, as they say. They work well together, and they also had like some French colonizers, I guess, in this as well. which right off the bat, you knew they were going to be, they were just going to be predator food. You know what I mean? They were in the movie to be killed by the predator, you know, but they ended up capturing both of them and taking them to their like camp or whatever. The predator ends up tracking them down and, you know, they have a whole big thing. I was into it though. I wasn't expecting that much from it, but it's actually really good. It's shot very well. The predator was kind of a douche in this, but it's a predator. But yeah, who was, and also I like the fact that there's a whole nother like breed of predator or whatever, or I guess you could say like the predators have different ethnicities now. Like he's like his whole like facial structure was different, and everything. I guess you could say that maybe they evolved from this predator, because this is back in the 1700s. Yeah, he kind of looked like a uncooked, like a raw turkey or something. Because the original one that I'm used to, like on the left, that's the one I'm kind of used to seeing. But they had like, there's a whole new, like another race of predator, I guess, which is really cool. Like it's kind of like a nice way to expand on the predator lore without going too much into it, you know, because end of the day, it's a predator movie. We're here to see the predator like just decimate whatever it's hunting. But I would like that. I would like to see, like, we go to the predator's home world again, and but we delve into how they became like so technologically advanced, and you know, that their rituals, like how they, you know, what they do when they're like, like how did they get there? Like, you know, who are they? How did they get there? You know, isn't that, I would love to delve into that, but I know it's mostly about the kills, the violence. But yeah, it was pretty good. My only thing I kind of laughed or scoffed at in the movie was she had this Naru had this axe. She tied a rope around like this hatchet. It was a hatchet, really. And so she tied a rope on the end of it, and she like throw the hatchet, and like she like tug on the rope to recoil it or whatever. And that's like the biggest, like, I know in a movie where it's about a space alien that loves to hunt and kill. Like, I know we in way out land anyway, but that even with that being said, that was still like the most unbelievable thing in the thing. Like, how do you, so you throw the hatchet and you pull it and just catch it just like that. Like, you're gonna cut some fingers off. Things are gonna smack you in the face a couple of times, right? I guess you could say, like, okay, if you just train with it. But she was in a crisis situation, like, so she had like a quick 5-minute montage of her like just throwing the thing in tree trunks and like recoiling it or whatever. It's like, okay, whatever, man. Jeez, whatever. That was dumb. Yeah, overall, it was pretty good. This was more of a, with all these predators, it's like, man, why don't you go to a planet where, like, there's actually competition? Like, how you go to a planet where you're, like, technologically advanced? You got, like, cloaking, you know, and stuff like that. Like, you can't respect that. That's like shooting fish in a barrel, in a sense. Like, come on, man. Like, go to like a planet where they got camo and they got like nuclear handguns or something like that, something crazy, you know, where they can hold their own. You know, it's an actual fight. It's not just you going somewhere. Because I got this sense, like, I just really is like, oh, come on, man, it's the Native Americans. You know, they got bows and arrows, for Christ's sake. Like, what are we doing here? You know what I'm saying? But yeah, I mean, with that being said, it was pretty good. I really liked it. It was like the characters were very believable in the setting there, and I was rooting for them the whole time, even against the colonizers, even like against the French colonizers in there. I was rooting against them. Like, yeah, man, set them up, and they set them up beautifully too. You know, and it was a pretty good. I'm giving this a 4. Good 4 out of 5. solid movie. I definitely see myself watching this again from time to time, having it on in the background or something. You see my chair, Lauren. Yeah. Damn chair. Anyway, Prey. Solid flick. Like it. Now, let's talk about what is pretty much my favorite thing streaming right now. It's my favorite TV show or currently on TV or on the internet or however we say it nowadays. This is Evil. This is available on Paramount Plus. The first season premiered on CBS back in 2019, I want to say. And since then, season 2 and 3 have kind of moved over to the app. And it is starring Luke Cage himself, actually. It has my man Mike Colter in this as Father David Acosta. And also starring Katja Herbert and Asif Manvi as Kristen Bouchard and Ben Shakir, respectively. And this is what is Evil about? So Evil basically is about an assessor. Well, it's David Acosta, who is in the earlier seasons he was training to become a Catholic priest. So in the third season he actually becomes a priest. But it's about him and Kristen Bouchard, who is like a psychologist, and Ben Shakir, who is like a tech guy. He's just kind of like a tech guy. And the Catholic Church is using the three of them as assessors for people who have like complaints of like demonic activity or, you know, things of that nature. Because that's a real thing, by the way, too. People will report like it's like demonic stuff or demonic activity or things of that nature to the Catholic Church, and they'll send out like assessors to kind of like go through like the place, the house, the building, whatever, and talk to the people and to assess if this is like a actual like haunting or event that needs to be exorcised, or if somebody needs to have an exorcism like taking place. Like, so it's pulling from the real world. It's a real thing, and that's why I really like the show, because as a Christian myself, it's vacant when it comes to like Christian horror, because I mean you have The Exorcist and stuff like that, but that's the extreme. Like it's always like the extreme. It's never like the little subtle things that go on like day to day. Like that's kind of just, nobody ever touches on that. And it's I like to coin this show as like theological horror, you know, because it very much has to do with like Catholicism. It's taking place in and around the Catholic Church, and I'm not Catholic myself. I think like the Catholic Church is creepy as all hell myself, but you know, as someone who is Christian, though, I love the show because there's a lot of like subtle things and subtle hints. It's kind of like, if you know, you know, kind of applies to this show. There is a lot of things that if you read the Bible, if you study scripture, if you're in a Christian walk in life, there's things you will recognize in this show that nobody else is really touching. And I love it because I like to call this a Christian show, but it's a real Christian show. A lot of Christian media is so watered down and just bad. Like, there's no other way to put it. Like, it's just so, like, not real. Like, because they have this very kind of, like, angelic air to it. And it's just the people in there, like, are so devout and they pray every day, you know, and they say the right, they have the right scripture on their mind for just the right situation all the time. And, you know, they never curse. They always do the right thing, you know, and it's just not real. It's not real. It's just, it's not real. And that's why David Acosta, the one who's like the main like person of faith in the show, Ben and Kristen are not, they are not in the faith. Kristen is a psychologist. So she, you know, she's in the analytical state of mind, even though I think she grew up Catholic, but there's an event that happened, which they touch on in the show, where she just kind of like disobeyed all of that. You know, she kind of like turned her back on God, on faith. And Ben is just a complete non-believer. He's a complete skeptic, and he's like a tech guy. And he's the one they put in, like, if there's a knocking in the wall or something like that, he'll come in and he'll like actually like look at like the structure of the house, and he'll go in and look at the wall and like look behind the wall and say, oh, you know, there's a loose wire thing here. So every time the air kicks on, it bangs this thing into the wall, you know? So yeah, there you go. It's not a haunting. You just got to fix this thing in the wall. There you go. Boom. Right. And he's good with computers and tech stuff and things like that. So he's like the main debunker of like everything, of like the physical stuff. He's the main debunker of the physical stuff. Kristen is the debunker of the psychological stuff. So like they think somebody's having like demonic possession or something, and she'd go in there and she'll like go through her like psychology stuff and like just is he possessed by demons? No, he's going through a manic episode, and he's, you know, psychological speak. And so that's one of the reasons that I think the show is very genius. The other reason is because it is a horror show end of the day. I love it because it do get like very goofy horror tropes, like because they have like demons in the show, you know, and it they can go pretty goofy with them too, as far as like you know, a guy in a rubber suit, you know, that's just like, you know, on set, and he's playing the demon, and like they show him like in full-on demon gear just like interacting with like people in the show. it's fun, it's goofy, I love it. Like as a horror fan, like it's very tongue-in-cheek, but also they do also kind of have like just very subtle things as well. Like they have like recurring demons in this too. So one of my favorite ones in here is George, old George here again. You know, he like intro the show and everything. George was like, they were night terrors, right? So Kristen at one point was having these recurring night terrors with George, you know, visiting her like nightly, right? And again, it's TV show. Well, it's a guy in a full like rubber suit, you know, like playing this character on TV. They show that she was, I think her daughters were like watching a horror movie or something like that, and it showed like and the creature in there was like the demon that was visiting her at night. They kind of pull it together in a way where they're saying like, oh well, she saw this in a movie one time, and it kind of rested in her like subconscious, and she's going through like a very stressful time, and so like that's kind of like activating this thing where in her dream her subconscious is bringing up this thing to visit her, you know. It's in a way to, I don't know, kind of cope, or just because she's going through this like rough time. And it's like, okay, that's actually pretty good. That I like that they do that, and it kind of can explain away, like in a real sense of like these experiences that people have is not overtly demonic, but even in that sense it is demonic, because something is visiting you in your dreams at night. Right? And you can explain away, oh, it was just like, you know, this thing I saw on TV, but something is visiting you every night. I kind of said something about like it's kind of like if you know, you know, kind of aspect to the show too, for like the Christians that will actually like watch this, and like they have stuff in here that I don't know, I don't think you have to be like just exclusively Christian to get it. It is kind of like in plain sight. If you are like in the Christian walk, they have stuff in here that like you will specifically like notice, see and notice and attune to. So like David Acosta, Father David Acosta now, but he's like blessed with the visions, pretty much like what they explain in the Bible. Him and Kristen are like very close in this show. Kristen is going through, she's going through it. She's done a lot of bad stuff in this show. Let's put it that way. And that brings me to this guy, Leland Townsend. Now, I'm not sure if he's just an agent of the devil or if he is Beelzebub himself, who was that guy? But Leland is like the force of chaos and evil in this show. And he's played by a guy, Michael Emerson, who plays him too well. He's playing Leland Townsend too well. God, what do I say about Leland? he is kind of the heel of this story. He is an all the way agent for the devil, how they use Leland is like they're showing you, because he is all in the church. He is like all up in the church, y'all. You just see him just all up in the church. He's like on the accessory board, I think that's how you call it. He's like on a first name basis with the Monsignor. He's been plaguing both David Acosta and Kristen and Ben since they started. Like he's in contact with Kristen's kids. Like, and he's going to trying to show you like, yeah, no, the enemy is all up in the church. And the other thing about it is again, Kristen and Ben have nothing they're not religious at all. They really don't have anything to do with the church. But as soon as they started working like with the church, Leland was all over. It's almost like the closer you, it's another thing, like if you know, you know, kind of thing, right? Like, because the closer you get to God, it's like the eye of Sauron just focuses right on you. Like he can't, like, you know, the devil can't have you getting closer to God. Like he is going to focus on you. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, and that's Leland. He got close to Kristen's mom. He then turned her. He's getting close to her kids. You know what I mean? He's been plaguing Ben. He's been plaguing David Acosta. You know, because again, he's up in the church every day. He's in the church. You know what I mean? One of my favorite characters in this is Sister Andrea. That's a good old Sister Andrea. She looks so sweet and so meek in there, but she is a force. And she is most definitely a force in this. And I love how she plays Sister Andrea too. She's gifted. She can like actually see demons in the show, right? And she like sees them, she interacts with them, she even like casts them out in her own way, which is like beating the hell out of them. Basically, in the season 3 finale, she actually takes a shovel to many a demon in that show and just beating the crap out of the damn thing. I love it. It's like one of my favorite moments in the show. I need a Sister Andrea in my house to just please sister, just beat all the demons out of my house, please. We just pack with them. Yeah, I mean, I can go on and on and on and on about this show. This is the third season. They already kind of setting up for season 4. And I can't wait. It's my favorite show going right now. Out of 5, man, this is a 5. This is a straight 5 for me. Yeah, I love it. This is, and I love this for, like, Christian media. Because Christian media is just, there's some good stuff out there. There is, but man, I can't get it because it's not real. You know, it's not real. Like, we need more Christian media that is like real, man, like real people, real events, real you know, real things. I like, you know, because, yeah, we go through like Christian's life and we go through Ben's life, and, you know, they aren't perfect. They aren't saying the right things, that they're not coming at life through like a Christian mindset or a godly mindset. You know, so they make mistakes, they screw up, and they have a really great scene where, you know, Christian kind of comes forward to David, you know, and yeah, it's really great. And between Christian and David, and I love this because my man David, he's a real guy, he's a real human being, he has real needs, real wants, you know what I'm saying? He has this real attraction going for Christian, and yeah, he has to pray on it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel you, brother. I feel you. You know, yeah, see, slamming down the brewski, you know, after a long day of saving souls, you know. But yeah, this is a great show. It's a good show. It's like, it's horror, but more with like a Christian overtone to it. It's dealing with faith. It's dealing with like Christ. It's dealing with, it's taking part in the Catholic Church. One of the greatest shows of all time for me, in my opinion, my humble opinion. And yeah, check it out. Paramount Plus, season 3, 5 out of 5. Yes. So and that brings me to the end of this, man. This was fun. This was cool. I liked it. Again, this is going to be like a weekly thing. I am hopefully you stay with me. You know, you got to the end. And I am, again, my name is Alex Mack. Yeah, catch me. This is a part, if you're listening, or if you want to find out how to catch me, this podcast is on, it's on everything at this point. It's on Apple, it's on Google, it's on Audible, it's on Spotify, Amazon Music, it's everywhere. Just look up Maniacal Books Podcast, and my name is Alex Mack. Yeah. I will see you next time, I guess. I hate that. I hate the weird inflection. Okay, I'm gone. I'm being dumb now.